their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And it is good to be back with you again this week. We are back from a workshop. That was fun. We'll talk a little bit about that soon.
Yeah, went up in Crested Butte for wildflowers.
We had a spectacular time and got to meet up with some old friends and some new faces too. So that was fantastic.
Yeah, and we'll do a short update on the 105 macro that Nikon came out with recently that we talked about not too long ago. We won't spend a lot of time on it, but we'll give you more of an in-field view of it. And short version, it remains a really, really good lens.
Yes,
and
sir.
Then we'll finally talk about the Nik Collection version 4 plugins that, you know, we've talked a little bit about, but, you know, we had some fairly serious bugs in the first release or two that have finally cleared, and so now it's a little bit cleaner in terms of discussing how it performs. So we'll talk about that, new features, etc., and our thoughts on it.
Absolutely. So we did a workshop, as our listeners probably knew, but it was good to be back out there. We went to the small town of Crested Butte, which is a mountain/ski town. But it's not one of the ones that's in the main corridor of ski areas in Colorado. It's actually more towards the southwestern part of their, you know, west central part of Colorado. And so it's a little bit out of the way, and that makes it really nice. But it's the wildflower capital of Colorado. I don't know if that's self-proclaimed.
That's official. No.
But it's official. Yes, it's on the
Colorado state made it official.
And so this is, so it's one of our favorite places to go. It's a place we go frequently. You know, I've been doing workshops there with you and together, and also just on my own as well. And it's very productive. You never know exactly what you're going to get. And this year was interesting because we had, it's very dependent on weather and climate. So this year we had a really hot early spring. But then it was followed by a lot of rain. So the flowers were still there. It was just different species assemblages than what we would normally get in mid-July. It was a little later. We saw stuff that would have been normally popping up more in the August timeframe in a what you would call a normal year. I don't know if that really exists anymore. Mm-hmm. But lots of things like pink fireweed and the yellow sneeze weeds and lots of purple asters at certain elevations. Then you go up to the higher elevations and we found tons of columbine and lupin and red and sulfur paintbrush and king's crown and just all kinds of stuff and insects and bumblebees and grasshoppers and pollinators and not too many mosquitoes, but they were there.
There were a few. The last time we were there was worse.
Yeah, it was manageable.
The times before that, there were none. So The norm there is very few or none. So it wasn't bad.
Yeah, but it was great. And we got to hang out with our clients. And I think everybody learned at least one or two new things. We talked about focus shift shooting and focus stacking. We did a lot of help with diffusers and reflectors, mostly diffusers. And I think everybody had a good time and most importantly came away with some shots they probably wouldn't have gotten otherwise had they not been on the workshop. And I think that's part of our mission.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of those techniques, if you haven't used them before, when you first get to try them and see the results and see how easy they are to do, frankly, it's kind of shocking. And I could see that happening a little bit with the group too, just the surprise at how useful these techniques really are, because they are.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say is I came back with a lot more gigabytes of images than I normally do because of the stacking.
Right.
Because I was shooting a lot of 20 plus shot focus stacks with the idea that I wouldn't use every frame, but I wanted to make sure I covered the range. And then we put them together in software. And for the most part, other than a few particularly tricky images that I had, most of them have come out quite nice. And so I'm happy with that. And looking forward to see what our clients did. A lot of them were going to work on their processing after they got home. So we're going to have to loop back with them.
Yeah. Now, we talked about discussing your extended thoughts on the 105 macro after really getting some focus time in the field. And I think, you know, what we said before still applies. Both of us had the experience of taking shots of things where there was a lot of fine detail, and we could just see fine detail in the shots with the new lens that we never saw with the previous one. It was just really obvious. And I've heard other people, you know, have the same reaction. It is just sharp as heck.
It really is.
Produces very nice images, and there's not, you know, the only thing that you could say was a negative is what we mentioned before, which is you can't use one of Nikon's teleconverters with it. Not a huge thing. It would be nice. That's about it.
Yeah. Now, it was outstanding to use.
Yeah. Now, the thing that both of us ran into with the 105, and it does not have to do with the lens, it has to do with cameras, is that when you're doing macro stuff, you're frequently changing distances a lot, and how out of focus something is can be pretty dramatic compared to normal shooting. And there's a quirk with the Nikon autofocus system where when something is really out of focus, it just doesn't want to change focus. And you hit the AF on button, which both of us used to do. It wouldn't matter if you were using the shutter button, and just nothing happens. And what you have to do is kind of force it manually to a different distance.
Right.
And then it'll acquire focus just fine. It doesn't happen all the time or anything, but it happens enough that you notice it. So Nikon needs to fix that in their autofocus system.
And to be fair, I'm just thinking now back to some shooting that I had done with my D850. It would occasionally happen with that camera too. Where I'm trying to, where it just didn't want to where you push the AF on button and it just did not trigger the focus motor. And you look at the little viewfinder indicator and you get those two arrows that are just both lit up saying, the camera thinks you're in focus. It's not locked on something, but we think you're good, I'm not going to say it's a strictly Z problem, although I've certainly seen it more. And we were both shooting with Z7 II's, right, Rick?
Right.
What I had.
Same here.
I mean, obviously with that many pixels, the ability to crop in helps a lot. I mean, I got some stuff of like, I had a shot of a beetle, a black beetle on a yellow flower, and it was munching it was a composite flower, all the little flowers in the middle. And, I just cropped in on that. I would have rather had a 200, but, it works. And one thing we both did as well on this trip, I should just to loop back, is we switched out of the macro and did close-up stuff with longer lenses. You were using a 70 to 200 and I believe a 1.4 converter, right? And then I was using my 300 f4 PF Nikkor, which is an outstanding lens. And one of the things about that lens and both of these lenses when you use them in this configuration is they focus a lot closer than you'd think, than the older 300 millimeter or whatever designs. Because I think the 300 PF will focus down to like 6 feet or even, about 2 meters, give or take, maybe even a little less than that. And what it does is it's so capable of throwing that background completely out of focus. And you just get a bokeh that you won't get necessarily with the macro lens, because you can shoot from a little farther away, that working distance. And I'm pretty sure we both got some shots in our keeper collection that were captured with those combos.
Yep. It was easier than shooting with a 300 2.8 there at Crested View, which is something I used to do on occasion.
Yeah,
a long time ago. That was a beast.
It is. The 300 f4 PF is a killer lens and highly recommended if you need that focal length from in a Nikon format. It's just so hand-holdable. It's ridiculous. I use it on a tripod, but still,
yeah,
it's tiny.
But to sum up the 105, we absolutely recommend it.
Yeah, it's definitely...
It's
a luxury
better.
Thing. If you already have the VRG, it's a kind of a luxury thing. But I think in both of our cases, the VRG is going to go up for sale, you know?
Yeah.
And
I can't see anyone regretting getting the new one. You know, sometimes the improvement is so marginal that, like, yeah, should I have really done it? In this case, it's not marginal.
Right. So it's unless you really noticeable. Need to use a teleconverter, and that's right. The way you shoot, this 105 was MC, whatever they call it, is absolutely stellar. It's definitely going to be on the list of, I don't want to say legendary, but it's right up there with as good a lens as Nikon's ever put out, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of sharpness, contrast, yep. etc. Okay.
So let's switch over to the Nik Collection, version 4.
And so this came out about May, right? This was, we were going to talk about it, and then we ran into some problems. The problems were really usability, you know, crashing and instability and sliders not perform, you know, just it was to the point where it was difficult to really give a good review to something. And so we could see
the potential.
Oh yeah. We
the
knew
potential
it was there.
Was clear, but you know, with it not even working with higher res files, that was a limitation.
Yeah, that's a downer. So right now, about 2 weeks ago, there was an update to version, I think 4.1 or something. I don't remember the exact version number. I'd have to go back and look. That solves most of those issues. There's still some work to be done. There's still some rough edges in places, but it does solve. And here's the upshot with the collection, because you get a bunch of plugins. The newest piece of this is that Silver Effects has been updated to version 3, and Viveza has been updated to version 3. All the other plugins in the suite remain the same as they were. There have not been changes yet, but apparently they are, you know, in the process of rolling things out. So there's been some UI redesign, and we'll talk about that, and then there's been some new adjustment sliders brought in, and we'll talk about those too.
Yeah, and just for people who aren't familiar with it, Silver Effects is their black and white plugin. Viveza is a color-oriented plugin that allows you to do selective color adjustments along with global ones.
Yes.
And both are very good tools that we've used for years in their previous incarnations.
Precisely.
Now, one thing they added too is you can use these things as before in both the Lightroom environment with more standalone modules or in Photoshop with Photoshop plugins, but they added a utility in the Lightroom environment that allows you to copy and paste settings between photos, and it works. It feels a bit crude to me, to be honest, but it does work, and so that's something that was new.
Right. So if you're batching things, or like I think you mentioned at one point, one nice implementation of that is like if you wanted to do something with a frame and you wanted to put a frame on an image, because that's one of the utilities that Silver Effects, for example, will do, or Analog Effects can do. And you can then batch that frame across a bunch of images.
Mind. Color Effects is what I meant to say. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool that you can do that. But let's just talk about the major changes to Silver Effects and Viveza, starting with Silver Effects, which for both of us, I believe, has been our go-to plugin. I mean, for black and white. It frankly generates the best output either of us have come. And we've tried other things.
Yeah, we've tried everything that's on the market.
And this one remains, in my opinion, the best just because of the way it works. It's designed to work like a a black and white traditional darkroom. Very cool stuff. So one thing that happened was that in both of these plugins is that the user interface, the GUI, changed. In some cases for the better, and then we'll talk in other cases maybe we don't like it, you know, as much. But there is now a common GUI between SilverFX 3 and Viveza, and we assume that this is going to be trickling down into the other plugins as well over time. And the biggest change is that with all the NIC plugins, there's a technology, and most people have heard it, you know, U-point technology or control points, whatever you want to call it, where you can simply click on an image to make a selection, and then you can adjust the radius. And then usually you can then adjust the parameters around that selection, like you want to adjust the brightness or the contrast or whatever, you know, you go through the list. And those sliders used to be attached to the control point as well as mimicked on the control panel. You could access them from one of two ways. Now they've gotten rid of that and it's only on the control panel side. So for whatever reason, this to me is something I'm still struggling with, because for the last 15 years I've been using these plugins and I'm used to just interacting with the control points directly on my image with their sliders. So now to have to go and find another panel is just a bit awkward for me.
Yeah, it's awkward for me as well. It's very easy to think you're adjusting a local slider only to be adjusting the global slider. And what really puzzles me is, I mean, I understand the idea that they were adding on new sliders and it would make those pull downs too busy, too long.
Right.
But they came up with an approach for that in their PhotoLab product that kind of tiers them, and it works, and they didn't use it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just, yeah, that puzzles me. At any rate, you can
but
get
used
really
to it. But there's some really cool stuff that they've added too. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is the ability to control the control point selection, to modify the selection in ways more than just placing one on the image, adjusting the size slider, and potentially having to add additional control points to be minus, you know, to zero things out to refine the selection. You can now refine your selections on a control point using chrominance and luminance sliders, kind of
so
like
color and light,
color and tone. And that's wonderful, because that really, if you combine it with the masking view where you can preview the mask, you can see exactly what you're selecting, and it allows for your selections to be even better than before. And that is
great.
A huge thing. That's a really fantastic implementation.
It's a killer feature, in my opinion. If someone hasn't played with that, you absolutely need to try it. It is great.
It's great. And then in SilverFX, they've added some tonal range adjustments, so you get more ability to adjust midtones and highlights in different ways. And then a new slider, and I'm going to let you talk about this one because I haven't messed with it much, but it has some promise. It's called Clear View. It's a slider that exists in some other DxO products, but it's in SilverFX.
Yeah, and in their PhotoLab product, it's present, and it works on color stuff as well as black and white. And the way they pitch it is it's kind of an alternative to the dehaze feature that you'll find in Lightroom and some other things. I think it operates a bit better than the dehaze tool does, which is kind of a blunt hammer, frankly. Mm-hmm. So it has a little bit more finesse. And in SilverFX, which is the only place it shows up, for some bizarre reason, they did not put it in their Viveza 3 product, which they should do. But in SilverFX, I don't know how to describe it, but it's an alternative way of putting in mid-tone contrast that is very, very usable and doesn't go out of control like a lot of tools, like Clarity tools do. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really get ugly in the same sense, and you just have to try it. But I find it works remarkably well.
It's so like Clarity, but different. It's
much more usable. So it's a great tool for black and white. Absolutely great. And I've, you know, it's now one of the standard things that I consider doing, especially on like a landscape or something like that.
And I agree with you. I want to see that slider added to Viveza, because that, to me, makes Viveza a far more go-to tool. Like, there's things you can do with Viveza. I don't use it as much as I used to. One of the reasons I would go to Viveza for my color images was for the structure slider, which is something that Nick has that, that was always very good. And in Silver Effects, you still got the structure sliders and you can do the tone, you know, mid-tones. There is one little quirk with it, and that's there's a blacks slider that appears in the structure section that really should be the tone slider because it's just a black slider for
tone. That's all it is.
It ended up in the wrong place. I don't know what happened there.
I think a programmer got confused. I think it's...
So anyway, the black slider under structure is not for structure and blacks, which... anyway. Yeah. Few little other GUI things, you know, they've improved things like the histogram is now at the top right corner instead of buried in the bottom, little things like that. But in by and large, it's very good. We're pretty happy with that.
I think a thing that they could do on their GUIs for both Silver Effects and Viveza and any new ones in the future is somehow color code global adjustments and local ones so you can easily see which ones you're doing, because it really does get confusing. Right. Both of us made those mistakes multiple times. So I think that's a GUI cleanup they can do.
And I'm going to just say it right here. This is the interface human factors design thing, you know, or whatever you want to talk about. You know, you click on your image to place a control point, and now you're forced to go back to a menu that has popped up in the bottom of your screen that you have to scroll down to find its controls. That, to me, is clunky. And it makes me less likely to enjoy using the product. I will continue to use the product because it's still the best thing out there. But, you know, my use case was always put the control point on, move the sliders associated with that control point in whatever factor I needed to. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be critical about that because it really does disrupt, you know, 15 plus years of muscle memory on how I use the product.
Right.
But in and of itself, the product works well. Now, Viveza, why don't you go through some of the stuff on Viveza?
Sure. So one thing they've added is a new color picker tool. And, you know, it's similar to one that you would find for adjusting white balance for a RAW file. This isn't, you know, RAW processing, so it's not that. But just allows you to finesse the white balance a little bit, both globally and locally, and that's a useful thing because sometimes when you start working with an image, you find it's a little bit off, and you know little tweaks are good. And then they also
get creative, right, Rick?
I mean,
you just want to do creative color adjustments, you know, and
that too.
You don't have to do it to make it perfect white balance.
No. The other thing is it does have some more tonal adjustments, similar to, you know, what Silver Effects got. So a little bit more expanded range. You know, think about, you know, what you see in Lightroom, you know, with white and black sliders in addition to the others. That's what it has. And those work at the control point level too. So with Viveza, not as many new additions, more the GUI cleanup and you know, the things that are common between them, you know, like the control point selection thing that we talked about, which is great. So, you know, overall, you know, would we recommend that people upgrade to it? Yes, at this point, for sure.
With the knowledge that there's still some rough edges in place.
There's some imperfections in there, but they're not going to kill you like they did initially.
Right.
I do think that one of the things that DxO needs to do is talk a little bit about their roadmap for updating the other plugins. And frankly, if I were them, there's some that I would just flat discard at this point. I wouldn't keep analog effects around. It's not that it's bad, but I would focus my attention on the more mainstream things.
Mm-hmm.
HDR effects, I would axe that one too. They're just things that are going to take a lot of investment for them to overhaul, and I'm not sure it's worth it.
To me, the three plugins that are the core of that whole thing in terms of where we stand today, not when they first came out, because when they first came out, the technology and what was available was different. But Viveza, Silver Effects, Color Effects, you focus on those, is a good place to be, because those are the ones from a creative standpoint, I use those absolutely the most. You know, you can do your sharpening and noise reduction and other tools now, and those might be able to be have room for improvement. Who knows? I don't know what's under the hood there, but I don't need Sharpener Pro like I used to use. I don't need, you know, Define for noise reduction like I used to, because there are other tools just in Lightroom that are at least as good and give me that same degree of flexibility.
Yeah. Now, the only thing I will say is DxO has some good noise reduction technology already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So given that, I would keep their Define plugin around, but updated to the new engine. And
right,
I'm sure they think that it conflicts with their pure raw tool and their PhotoLab tool. I don't think so. I think it's a little bit different thing, and I think they ought to do that.
Right.
But
so, I mean, there are some bugs. There are still some rough edges, but it's solid software at this point. You know, you're not going to have, it's not going to fail on you. You're not going to just, it's not going to just decide to die running a high resolution image like the earlier versions did. So we like it. One little side note we mentioned, and again, this goes back to your roadmap question. There's no native Apple Silicon support yet for this plugin.
Yeah.
And that is that can range from no big deal to mild, you know, to an extreme inconvenience. And I'm just going to lay out the use case. If you're just using the plugins from Lightroom, it's not an issue at all, because they just run under Rosetta on an Apple Silicon, you know, right now the laptops or an iMac, whatever, that's running the M1 chip. No biggie. You just do it. At some point, we would assume that future versions of this plugin would be sped up by taking advantage of the Apple architecture, but that hasn't happened yet. Where the problem comes is if you want to use it in Photoshop, because right now Photoshop has been updated to native M1 support. And so if you launch Photoshop natively, which is what we were, you know, which is the default condition, you won't even see the NIC plugins showing up, even though they may have been installed. They won't even be available to you, which means you have to run Photoshop under Rosetta in order for those plugins to work. Now, that's a huge, it's a big deal, and it's not. I mean, they work that way, but you're giving up tremendous performance boosts to Photoshop, because my experience running this Photoshop on my new, you know, M1 laptop is that, wow, it's killer fast. So to have to run my software in a crippled configuration, and in and of itself, that wouldn't even be a thing, but other manufacturers like Topaz have figured out a way to at least invoke their plugins, which still run under Rosetta, but you can at least invoke them for underneath the native Photoshop environment. So like if I want to use like Sharpen AI, it shows up in my list and I can launch it, even though Sharpen as a product has not been updated for Apple Silicon yet. So that is, I know it only affects a certain subset of our listeners. You know, it certainly doesn't affect me on my desktop computer because that's still an Intel machine, but I would like to see that happen sooner than later, at least come out and say, yeah, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
I believe they are working on it. I'm pretty sure they're working on it. I can feel confident in saying that I'm pretty sure they're working on it, but we don't know when it's going to show up. And that's a challenge, because I think that's something that people consider when you're upgrading computers to the, you know, new stuff.
I think they need to be clear about their intentions and rough timelines, understanding that things can change.
Sure.
Yeah. But at any rate,
not to end on a down note, but it's still great software. We still both have it. It's definitely worth the upgrade at this point.
Like you said earlier, I think both of us prefer it over anything else out there, and we have tried all those other things.
Oh gosh, yeah. I had some weird color casts with flower photos because they were so yellows mm-hmm. and greens. And I used Color Effects Pro with one of its tools to do the correct color cast. It was amazing. All of a sudden, there was red and blue flowers in the background in the bokeh that weren't there before. I mean, and I couldn't get the white balance adjusted correctly in Lightroom because I didn't, you know, use a gray card. Should have, but whatever. So, absolutely on our list of recommended products, because I don't think you'll find anything better out there.
Yeah. All right. I think that does it.
I think we are at, we've reached the limit of what we can talk about this week. If you have ideas or you want to hear feedback or show requests, topics, whatever, questions, jump on over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/imagedoctors, and we will gladly answer them both there and possibly even on the air. So until next time.
We like getting those more than people would think.
Yes, it's always good. So until next time, happy shooting.
All right, bye-bye.